Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Speak Out Loud. My name is Success Coach Ricky Terry, president of One Due North and host of this show. Guys, we have a great one today, and I can't wait to get started. I know there's been a lot of talk about voting, voting suppression. There's been a lot of mis and disinformation out there, but tonight we're going to give you the history of the vote, particularly the women's vote, and we're going to talk about the African-American woman's vote. You guys know what happened in this previous election. The women carried it across the line, and the House was better for it. And tonight, we're talking about, you know what, the November elections. And you and you and you are going to play a critical role in getting us past where we are now. And I need to tell you something. We need to get there and get there soon. We can't take another 4 years. I know I can't. And so tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to allow our guests to give you their background and why they're here. And then we're going to jump not into an interview. So if you came expecting that, you might be a little disappointed. Tonight we're going to talk about what it will take, almost like a salon top style conversation. You guys know I grew up with five sisters, no brothers, and I'm the only boy and the oldest. And so I'm used to hearing women in power talk. As I told my guests, I'm not a big fan of women empowerment. That suggests that they shouldn't be there. Well, I got some news for you. We are going to examine this conversation like we've never done before. And so tonight, get ready. We got 1 hour to give you all we can to help you plus three. I want to say it again. You plus three need to go to the polls. It's important that you help us get people to the polls. We're going to start tonight with Dr. Ida Jones. Dr. Jones is she's a staple, a hallmark when it comes to voting and voting rights. And she's going to give you her resume and she's going to tell you why it's important. She's going to give us the history of it. And then our second guest, Miss Sharon Anderson, is going to come in. You know what she is. Now, my wife, how y'all do that thing? My wife won't let me do that thing y'all do. What is that thing y'all do? Don't do it. I can't do that thing they do. But I can tell you, she sits in an important seat, and she'll tell you what that is. Dr. Jones, how are you?
Good evening, Mr. Terry. How are you?
I am doing well. Now, I ain't going to let you call me Mr. Terry too many more times. I'm just plain old Ricky Terry, as they call me in the Carolinas, or Coach, if you like. But we are glad to have you tonight. Will you give the people a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what it is you do so we can get into this thing?
Well, I want to say good evening to your hosts, and I'm going to hold off on my video. I didn't prepare for FaceTime, unfortunately, so you'll have to go with my voice. Okay. I want to thank both you and Danita, as well as your able assistant son, who is engineering from the background, to have me here on One Due North. I love to see families working together and making it happen. I am the university archivist at Morgan State University. I'm a career archivist with over 20 years of experience, and what an archivist does is symbiotic to what a librarian is. I always say it's like a farmer and the restaurant. So the restaurant is the library, where you go in, you're seated and treated very nicely. The archivists work on the farm with the raw materials. So the photographs, the manuscripts, the letters, all of the contents that make up history, the elements that make the story are in archives. And the materials we have are one of a kind. So if anything happens to those items, they no longer cease to exist. So that is what I've dedicated my career's work to, is preserving the African-American archival record in the spirit of Dorothy Porter and other librarians who've done the work prior to the field of archives being introduced to African-American people in the 1940s. What I do is history. I am a trained historian, and I love the African-American story, but I also love the gendered aspects of it. So I do African-American women's history in various locations, organizationally and nationally. So I look forward to a hearty conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, we are glad to have you, and I'm going to ask you to begin with. I need to know why you think voting is more important this year than ever before.
Well, clearly we are at a global crisis, not just simply with the pandemic, but there are larger issues abroad in terms of the unemployment rate, as well as they call the gap of the digital gap, as well as just the wealth gap. So persons of color in general, but African Americans in particular, have been always on the lowest rung of that as a majority. And even though there's been stellar success with millionaire athletes and millionaire entertainers and millionaire startups that have done well for African Americans, the majority of us are not doing very well economically and really are suffering. So what I've tried to explain to people about the franchise or the vote is that it is literally your voice. I was speaking to a group of young women in Baltimore called Women in Transition. And these are young women who will be transitioning out of foster care. And one of the young ladies asked, well, why do I care? And what does my vote mean? What does that mean? I said, it controls every aspect of your life. If you want to be a cosmetologist and open a beauty salon, you have to have zoning regulations. The elected officials that you put in office or choose not to put in office are the ones who dictate that. You want to deal with taxes in terms of your what your check looks like. They're the ones that set up the taxes, both federal and state, and excise. So all of the things that streetlights, sewage, trash collection, every aspect of your life is affected by those persons who have been elected by you to sit in office and represent your interests. So when you choose not to voice your opinion through the vote, then you're going to now dictate or let someone else dictate to you how you shall live and what will be the circumference of your reality. So I try to explain that in the contemporary sense. As a historian, the African-American presence in this hemisphere, or the African presence in the Western hemisphere, was not by choice. There was forced migration. We know it as chattel enslavement, which was a global reality. And thus this Black Lives Matter issue is a global issue because it was a global economic system that enriched one part of the world and raped and pillaged another part of the world. And we in the Western hemisphere are in the middle of that wealth and savagery. So what happens is that African Americans were chattel. That means property. Mm. You had no right, no ability. The chairs we're sitting in, the screens we're looking at, were equivalent to our ancestors. They were someone else's to do with as they sought to do. So as they struggled for the right to be free and be considered citizens throughout the 19th century, the Civil War was fought over that economic right to move the country from an agrarian or a farming way to a more urban and industrial way. So it really had a lot to do with how the economy was shifting. And African Americans, like again in this term, are a smokescreen or a football being used by larger persons. So in 1870, there is a discussion of enfranchising non-white property-owning men, because those are the ones who had the vote and controlled everything. So in 1870, they said, well, who do we give it to? Black men or the women? And so there was a man named Robert Purvis, who was an African-American man, and his daughters Harriet and Hattie Purvis were against the idea of not including gender with the franchise. So there was a conversation, both Black men and women, or just Black men. So once again, they used it strategically to separate and cause a division. And a Baltimore native, Francis Harper, poet, says, I lay down my gender for the race because the African-American man will take care of my needs, whereas white women will concern themselves with their own household. So that will strengthen their hand and lessen mine. So as a result, African-American men, along with property-less white men. So it's not just Black men. We need to understand that all other men who were not rich got that vote in 1870. And that's what I call the first fracture in the conversation, because it causes a rift in the women's movement, because the white women used very ugly language, very colorful language equivalent to number 45 in terms of race, and Sambo, and referring to African Americans as well as Patrick and other derogatory terms for Irish American or other ethnic white Americans as Asian Americans getting the vote over their daughters and mothers who stood by their side. So then they fight for the next 70 plus years to get the vote in 1920. And that fight was not without African American women seeking to join in collaboration, but often spurned and therefore charting their own path. I have to mention, if I can jump in here real quick.
Please do. Yes. Last week, the organization that you are a part of celebrated a milestone. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm not sure. I belong to so many organizations. Is it the Women's Heritage?
There you go.
Yes, I do sit on the board with Danita on the Maryland Women's Heritage Center, of which I've just been added to the board. And they have been doing extraordinary work to locate local suffrage activity throughout the state of Maryland. And they had just launched on last week a podcast, a series of podcasts in concert with the Maryland Preservation League, I believe. So you actually have biographical statements being read in great voice, accompanied with photographs and bibliography on women, lesser and greater known women in Maryland throughout time, both the ballot in terms of the suffrage, and then beyond those who actually held office. So it's a lovely project that we actually had, I think, about 14 women done from the Maryland Wow. Women's Heritage Center.
And the really great part of that is they just celebrated, because as you say, my wife sits on that board as the vice president. They just celebrated 100 years. 100 Yes. years. And what gets me, ladies and gentlemen, we know for 400 years we've been tolerating a lot, but in the last 100 years, again, women have been at the forefront of the vote. And even when we didn't have the full right to vote, we participating in ensuring that that happened. That leads me to the next thing. And I'm going to go ahead and bring in Miss Anderson. Sharon, you told me to call you that. By the way, I gotta tell you, I am excited about the knowledge that you two bring to this conversation. Sharon, will you please introduce yourself to our guests, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then jump in wherever you feel like you fit in, because I'm just going to sit back and watch this happen. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Ricky, for having me here. And I really enjoyed hearing what Dr. Jones had to say. Ida, I know you told me to say Ida. I'm Sharon Anderson. I'm presently a consultant. I work principally with nonprofit organizations, and I've been doing that for quite a while, since 2007. And it's been a great experience for me. Prior to that, and one of the things I must admit, Ricky, I know I didn't mention, is the fact that my background also includes working in state and local government, including the District of Columbia government, yep. and working on municipal issues with like the National League of Cities. And I will just say that what Ida was saying about the importance of elections is the fact that having worked with elected officials, this is how things are decided about our lives, and just trying to impress upon everyone just how critically important that those decisions are in making those choices about who leads us and who will lead our cities, our counties, our states, and of course our country. As you mentioned, I am a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. I am a member of Xi Omega Chapter in Washington, D.C. And the work that I'm doing there is I sit on a committee called the Connection Committee. And that is the sorority's public policy, civic engagement, networking arm. And it's our responsibility to really get out there, not only with our members, but also with the public regarding getting registered to vote, making certain that people have good information about voting and that they use all of their resources regarding that. So it's a civic engagement piece. And coupled with my membership in Alpha Kappa Alpha, I'm also a member of the League of Women Voters in the District of Columbia. And so we've been able, between my chapter, Xi Omega, and my working with the League, to partner on things like voter registration and getting out, right now, getting ready to focus on getting out the vote.
The voter registration part is gonna be huge. And you and I spoke about this earlier. We've always known we need to vote. We've always gone through the motion of drive the vote every 4 years. What is going to be different this year to ensure that not only we get voters out who can vote, but what about those who have lost or had their right to vote taken away? We're going to need them, I believe, to get involved in this. I don't think if you've been taking out of that because of past problems, how do we ensure that we generate the energy to get every single person of color out to vote? How do we do that?
It is really going to be a personal mobilization. When you were using the term, and I'm not going to get it exactly right, but you were talking about take three.
Mm-hmm. Vote plus three.
You were saying earlier, that's right. Yourself plus three other people. That is actually a cross platform the things in the nonprofit world is being involved with organizations like Nonprofit Vote, which basically says we're nonpartisan, as is the sorority, we're nonpartisan, but that doesn't take us out of the equation of mobilizing people and getting them engaged. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of effort that has to be done. And this year is not only complicated by the pandemic, it's also complicated across the board with voter suppression, with bad information, misinformation, all of that. And this is where everyone taking this on as a personal mission to get at least three, if not more, mm-hmm. to get people out to vote, because we have to serve as those trusted resources for our family, our friends, our colleagues, all of them, to help get people engaged, make certain they have good information, and to then make certain that they follow through and vote. And when you were talking, for instance, what has been, with all that's gone on with the racial injustice issues this year, one of the things we saw happen just these past couple of weeks was the National Basketball Association.
Oh, wasn't that beautiful?
Oh my goodness. But even before, now this was motivated by a horrendous act in Wisconsin. But even before that, when you think about folks who have been incarcerated, and many of whom are Black and brown people, and the fact that back in the day, the criminal justice system was supposed to be a rehab, you know, help people get rehabilitated. Once you served your sentence, you returned to your citizenship mm-hmm. because you paid your dues to society. And then you see the atrocities in Florida, my personal opinion.
Come on. Which one? You mean the hanging chads or up to date now?
Up to date now, which is the fact that the citizens of Florida voted to return the vote to those who were previously incarcerated. And then the legislature started maneuvering and manipulating and coming up with all these different rules. Here again, the National Basketball Association and the personification of LeBron James stepped up and came up with an organization that says, okay, you're throwing this hurdle in front of folks saying, well, you have court fees you have to pay. And even though it's in the courts that that's poll tax, he's saying, okay, for this election, we will help people pay those fees so that they then can move forward.
You know, I can't tell you how important it is. And Dr. Jones, jump in wherever you want. Like I said, this is not an interview. One of the things that I'm really concerned about, and you just mentioned it, Sharon, is it's the voting up and down. It isn't just the presidential vote that we need. I want to make sure people understand how important it is, and I believe it was Dr. Jones that mentioned it earlier. Guys, in the last 3.5-4 years that we've had the current president, I want you to, and if you're joining us, by the way, inside the Zoom room, we're going to bring you in. If you have questions, go ahead and type your questions out. We're going to get to them or raise your hand. We'll get to you. We may even be able to bring you on camera. But one of the things I want everyone to understand about this vote is the president has the power to appoint judges. I don't know if people are aware, this president has appointed 198 judges. I need you to understand, this is up from the Supreme Court all the way down to where you go pay your fines and tickets. The president appoints those appellate court judges and those Supreme Court judges, and thereafter, 198. I want you to take a guess at how many were Black. Take a guess, anybody. I'm looking in the Zoom room. I'm checking in the with my panelists. Does anybody know? Because I'm gonna tell you, I was shocked when I found out zero judges were even put up in terms of Black, were even put up to be nominated. 198 judges, and 198 of them were white. Now, I need you to understand what that means. Better yet, I got an expert. Dr. Jones, when the president appoints 198 non-Black judges, what happens to us?
Well, that becomes the issue of why politics is local, because they will then enact laws and or simply find different ways of ruling against what we would call reasonable thought. And so actually, back to Maryland very briefly, because Maryland did not ratify the 19th Amendment, which we actually are celebrating the centennial of in 1920, is what we were talking about trying to get up to, is 1920 was when women received the right to vote. And Maryland did not ratify that vote till 1941, and then did not even really certify the ratification until 1958 because of a judge in the state of Maryland, Baltimore City, who went to the Supreme Court with the fact that women should not have the right to vote. Now, he lost his case, but he was a sitting judge in Baltimore City. So one can only begin to imagine, if you had an issue to adjudicate before his bench, what kinds of ways he would choose to be in favor. So even in New York right now, there's a discussion about people being held in prison for years because they can't pay the fines to be released. So if you can't, if you don't collateral to put up to get released or bail, you're going to sit in jail. So people literally are sitting in jail. Some are actually dying from violent attacks and other things in jail, just waiting to their case to be heard. And they haven't been proven guilty or innocent, just waiting for a trial. And they can't pay their bail. So judges are making those kinds of life and death decisions.
And I need you to understand. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
I'd just like to piggyback on what Dr. Jones was saying, because also a lot of those judges who were appointed, I shouldn't say a lot, but quite a few, one of the big sticking points that came up was the fact that many of them, when asked, would not acknowledge that Brown versus Board was a legitimate decision. There was hesitancy or an unwillingness to embrace that as established precedents, as though it could be questioned. And I think that speaks to your question about what happens when, you know, you have these judges who particularly have this particular thing where we've always considered Brown v. Board to be settled. And it's almost like it can be questioned, really?
Yes. And I need us to understand something, black and white. When you say, we're talking voting, but voting encompasses our rights. And one of the rights is to be, if we should be tried, we should be judged by our peers. We seldom see an all-black jury, but it is not, I don't know what to say, to see an all-white jury. When all-white judges are there and attorneys are white, they find ways to find white jurors who don't understand us and already are prejudiced against us. Now, one more thing. Before we get to the courts, your votes for sheriff, police captain, all of that, it matters, guys, because they're the ones arresting you. They're the ones that bring you to the judge. And so it is important that you get out and vote. Now, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I am going to tell that your vote has never meant more this coming November than ever. But we can't stop there. We have 100 years of the women's suffrage movement. We have 400 years of black people being oppressed, and we've just gone through two more killings. One we discovered just today, where they placed a bag over a black man's head and he suffocated. A second, we know a brother was shot in the back, what, 7 times? We know that the scab was ripped off of an infected wound when Mr. Floyd was murdered. We keep seeing this repeated and repeated and repeated. And this happens when we don't vote the right way. So it is important in these last few minutes that we have that you understand. And so I'm going to ask my experts, and Sharon, we'll go back and start with you. I need you to make a plea to all of your sisters, and we're gonna give this one to you. I need you to make a plea to all of your sisters, how important it is, them plus three. Can you do that for me, please?
Of course, thank you for that opportunity. What we recognize is the importance of, as I was saying earlier, especially this year, because of all the complications with the pandemic and with everything else going on, this year it is critically important to make a plan. This is not one of those times where you just sort of say, well, maybe I'll stroll in on November 3rd. folks really do need to make a plan and decide, how do you want to vote? Do you want to vote in person? Do you want to vote by mail?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the, if you will, complication, part of the challenge, which is not necessarily bad, it's just something we just need to knuckle down like we can do and we've done before, is to be very clear about the specifics of where you live. Because the reality is our voting process is also very local. And so it depends on your city, your county, your state, as to what the rules are. And so it is critically important to figure that out and to be able to know, what are your options for voting by mail? What does that look like? If that's your choice, the big issue, and after making a plan, is to move quickly.
Yes.
It is to be early. And if you want to vote in person, then check and see, do you have early voting? If you do, vote early. One of the head of the Board of Elections here in the District of Columbia came up with a phrase that I really like. It's called, the longer you wait, the longer you wait. And her point being, the longer you wait in the system to vote, even with the early voting week that a lot of communities have, if you wait until November 3rd, that's the longer you're going to wait in line. And so the key is make a plan and to move quickly.
Well, I like that. And Ida, I want to come to you, Dr. Jones. Can you talk about the irony of Kamala Harris being on the VP nominated for vice president, the first time we've had an African-American woman get there, and we pray break that glass ceiling finally? What is the significance of that, along with the 100-year anniversary of the women's suffrage movement?
Well, it has quite a cosmic experience in terms of the fact that she ran her own presidential bid in 2019 in that supersaturated field and then chose to bow out, and then was in yet another slightly supersaturated field of potential VP candidates of other equally qualified women of color. And so for her to have been selected and to rise to the top as a prosecutor in California with a record that was rather harsh on African Americans for a variety of reasons, she represents all of the kind of conflict that we in the African American community have. All of us are not Democrat. All of us are not Republican. I myself am an independent. But I think she said something rather profound about the fact that she doesn't believe in defunding the police. She believes in law and order that's reasonable. And so as a result, to say that we are using catchphrases in the media to say that one group is totally in law and order, the other group is reckless and anarchist, is how they're spinning it. So I think we really have to look at the records of the persons running, as well as the rhetoric of what they're really saying. Because if you listen to what's being said with just the talking heads, you would seem like there was one group that's supporting the flag, another one that's burning the flag. So her being an African-American citizen of immigrant parentage, an HBCU graduate, a member of the first founded Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority at Howard University. There's so much she represents in terms of sorority women, African-American HBCU graduates, immigrant people. She is literally a prism through which we see refracted a lot of the light of the African-American experience. And so her being there is a profoundly strong visible or visual or optic, as the Obamas were. And so as a result, that does turn some heads, but then also we have to listen to the rhetoric, and whether we agree or disagree, as I had one person tell me, you might just have to hold your nose and make a vote, because if you don't, you would have already empowered another party. And when they rule against some of your desires, then don't complain, because you basically gave them the power.
Well, I've got to agree with you. And I'm gonna say it again, hashtag vote plus three. We really need you. And my guests are really busy. Unfortunately, they couldn't give the whole hour to us. We wanted to get in here at about 45 minutes and just drill home how important it is that you vote. We need you. Now, somebody tell me if I'm wrong, but I was talking to a group of young leaders and telling them the importance of their vote. And some of them said to me, because they've been put in jail on bogus charges because they made some mistakes and they've owned their mistakes, their concern is they're totally left out, and I don't believe that. So I thought about it for a while, and here's what I'd like to do. I don't know where the organizers are. I don't know where the community leaders are, but I hope you can find those who have been disenfranchised from voting and communicate to them. We need them to be on standby to help get people to the polls. Maybe they can help organize other activities, but no one of color should be left out of this most important fight. I dare say this is the most important fight we've had in the last 100 years. And I'm gonna tell you something. My wife and I had the privilege of going to both of President Barack Obama's inaugurations. We even got to go behind the scenes. I had never felt that much pride in my life until a Black woman is now nominated to be Vice President of the United States. And not just because she's Black, but because she's fair. And yes, she's dealt us a bad hand, but nothing compares to what we possibly may get from the next 4 years. I want to thank my guests, Ms. Sharon Anderson and Dr. Ida Jones from Morgan. One question apiece. Sharon, if people wanted to get involved with the Women's League, the movement that you are a part of, how can they do that?
I think the key is to check with your local organizations. And while I'm definitely a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, we have the Divine Nine, which are the nine Black sororities and fraternities. And all of them have been engaged in this effort for civic engagement. So if you follow them for other events, check and see, check their websites. But the League of Women Voters is also disseminated across, and they have local chapters which are doing things. And when you mentioned about those who have been are fearful of disenfranchisement, being disenfranchised, gotcha, because of some, you know, spot on their records, part of what the DC League of Women Voters is doing is trying to make certain that we get information to those who have been our returning citizens. And in the case of the district, for some of our citizens who are currently incarcerated, but because locally it's been chosen that they can vote, to make certain that they have that right. So find those local voices and join in.
Good. And Dr. Jones, what say you?
Well, there are multiple generations we have to consider. I know Black Girls Vote and Rock the Vote are very popular on social media for our millennials, and I think that'll be a very good thing for some of us, mm-hmm, who are seasoned to connect to see what language they're using and to be able to really connect across intergenerationally. I actually did a talk for the Baltimore City League of Women Voters, and they are partnering with a variety of churches and religious organizations to hold voting registration activity in various places. Like there's a parking lot next to a mall somewhere in Baltimore City and other places where people who are not reading newspapers, who don't belong to collegiate organizations, gather. So they're trying to reach those individuals who are not typically in our principal circles to be able to let them know that they're included. And also they want to register them on the spot, not tell them go across the street or go somewhere else. They'll lose them in that. So they really want to register them on site at the moment of the first engagement. And then I know that the idea of disfranchising felons or former convicts is state by state, because I believe Maryland allows them to vote. So they're also trying to give some solid information on what does the state say, because when you hear this national conversation about taking away the vote of certain persons who have had challenges, when it is a state by state decision, the majority of states do let those who have been convicted of crimes, once they have served their time, to now receive their full citizenship rights. And I just want to hint very closely that in Florida, there was a girl named Juwanna Thompson who has a group called Woke Vote. Once again, those millennials. And so they went to court in Florida and helped reverse that. So there are some young people in their 30s and 20s who are doing some amazing work. And the way they do it is different than the civil rights movement of their grandparents, but they're still concerned about the end game, which is allowing everyone to have a voice and a vote. So I would suggest we kind of go intergenerational with that.
Well, I like that. And we had a question to come in. How can someone like me get motivated with getting voter information out, getting people what is that? Can't reshare it to work the polls. Is it too late to get involved with working the polls? Is it too late to do anything from an individual standpoint to get involved?
May I?
Yes, ma'am.
It is not too late. And there is a great deal of push going on. In fact, there was on September 1st, a thing about election workers. And that's still the case. There are still, boards of elections are still looking to engage people to serve as poll workers, election judges, they're called in Maryland, election workers, it's a different name. The key is to find your local, your state, start with your state board of elections, and you will find the information there about election workers. And depending on the state, in many states, high school students can work the polls. Yep. And either get community service hours and or some states maybe get a stipend.
Wow.
So this is really important. And the effort is out there to speak to Dr. Jones's point about being intergenerational. There is a concern with the pandemic of getting younger people working the polls. So check your local board of elections as a start.
Well, I found something yesterday that blew my mind. I was on Facebook trying to promote this, and I found Facebook is giving people where they can go to their polls in their states based on where you are when you put your info on Facebook. And I almost jumped out of my chair, so did my wife, because finally, we think Mr. Zuckerberg did something right in letting people know where they can go to their polls. How they can get in touch, as you said. So if you're on Facebook, there's a little thing up there. They talk about the coronavirus, and then they talk about voting 2020. Please don't just look at that as a color thing to pass by. Our lives depend on this. Both, I don't know what to say. If you don't vote, you are condemning all the work that your great-great-grandparents did. Do you understand? I was at the march, the anniversary march, and it was more of a, we must really overcome, we shall overcome march than anything else. And so we're gonna need everybody to jump in. I really wanna thank both my guests. You guys, you mean the world to me, and I hope there was something said that we can grab to. Remember, vote plus three. And I just wanna say to the vice president to be, ma'am, we are so proud of you. We're proud of your work. We're proud of what you did. I'm proud from the first slave woman that hit this shore to Miss Harriet Tubman, who said we had a right to be free, and all the way up to Big Mama. Big Mamas across the country, we need you to talk to your young men and women and let them know this is not the time to stand on the sidelines. You can't stand on the sideline any longer. Before we go, last time, do you have anything you guys want to say? We're at that time.
Well, I'll just add to what you were saying about getting voting information and specifics to where you are located. There are so many resources, but two of the trusted ones we're working with is When We All Vote, which First Lady Michelle Obama was instrumental in starting. They have a wonderful website where you can get information and details.
And it's called, again, what? When We All
When
Vote?
When We All Vote.
Okay, we're going to put that down in the chat so we'll have it. When We All Vote. Go ahead.
And the League of Women Voters has a site called vote411.org. And that drills down where you put, if you put your address in, it will tell you not only who's running for office, it'll tell you what all is on your ballot.
Okay. Well, that's not one word, that's all of it. Let's see here.
Do you want me to type it into
the chat? Yes, please, please. Okay. And Dr. Jones, what say you, ma'am, as we leave out of here?
I would like to challenge everyone to subscribe to a Black newspaper and to really invest in the minor moments of an election. It should not be episodic. It should be a daily element of one's diet, like you take vitamins and nutritional value, that we simply re-engage ourselves in terms of the way our ancestors did to stay woke, as the kids say, and read the Black press, to engage a Black organization and to support those things that have our interests at heart, and to make that an annual event and a monthly event and a daily dietary part of our intellectual activity.
Well, I agree and concur with you. And one of those is the Afro, one of the oldest American, Black American newspapers in the country. And we hope to have one of the former writers and editors, Mr. Edgar Brookins on the show soon, who's going to give us a history, because this man is a walking history of the news, especially in the African-American community. Well, we've reached that hour. I want to thank you. I also want to tell both of you, Miss Rhonda Bruford, my homegirl, my wife's homegirl, and then my cuz from the South, wanted to say thank you so much for coming on board. And I am just, I'm so filled. I hope you will come back before the night of the election so we can do a round table and talk about this. Please continue to stay safe. And to all my people out there, don't be fooled. This virus has not gone anywhere. But I'm going to say this. I can't speak for you and your health. It was important enough for me to go down to the march. It was important enough to die for. I believe in it. Continue to wear your mask. You know, continue to wear your mask. Don't get fooled. Okay. And continue to protect those you love. Guys, you've been listening to Speak Out Loud. My name is Rick Terry. I've had my guest on here today, Ms. Sharon Anderson and Dr. Ida Jones, who have brought you some great information. Continue to march. It's not over yet. Continue to march. It has been my plum pleasing pleasure to be with you today. And remember, I am your coach.